For people that don't know me, I'm a Radja man. My name's Roy, my surname's RC. And my family come from Wellington, New South Wales. I was born and bred in a little place called Mandel Reserve on the banks of the Macquarie River. I'm one of eight kids. I was five sisters and two brothers. And my mother was, we lived from pension day to pension day, and we done it very hard. And times were tough back on the reserve back home. And I guess that is a driving passion or the inspiration for me to try to advocate and fight for our rights because of my upbringing and the pain and suffering and what I seen my mother experience as a single mum growing up with eight kids. And so I got into the struggle, into the fight for, you know, at an early age. And I've got a cousin in this room, and he used to take me and sit me down, and he tell me, you just observe, watch, and you listen, you know. And I often seen him sit there and tear people apart in government departments and what have you. I sat back and observed, and I watched and I listened, and I learned about body language, and that was very important for me. My presentation tonight is going to be very, very simple. I believe that we have solutions, and the solutions are out there in our communities, they're with our people. The key challenge from my perspective, being in a leadership position, is how do we engage? How do we create that opportunity to engage with our people? Bungi talked about have we surrendered, and I think the days are gone. These are my views, my opinions. The days are gone when we can just jump on a bus and go and march down the street. I think the days have come where we can just jump on Facebook or just jump on the internet, you know, and use that as a medium to engage our younger people, re-engage our people. Because it's a key challenge. They're disengaged, whether we like it or we don't. They're not engaged. The other two points that I quickly want to touch on was the importance of a national voice for us in this country. I think we'll all agree that the abolition of ATSIC has left a big hole in Aboriginal affairs in this country, whether we like it or we don't. Love ATSIC or hate ATSIC, it played its role. And actually, as a young man or a young kid growing up, I always wanted to be an ATSIC regional councillor because I believed in ATSIC. And it's deliberate under the previous governments, the Howard regime and past governments. It was deliberate to silence us and silence our national voice, and it's been very successful. I think they've been extremely successful. We've gone back, and you talk to our older people, and you talk about people that are involved. You know, we've gone back some 15, 20 years. And speaking of our older people and our elders, it's remiss of me before I started that I didn't acknowledge the traditional custodians of this country that we meet on. And I now acknowledge our elders, both past and present, and equally as important, we must not forget our brothers and sisters who have gone before us. So I do apologise for missing that point. So some would argue that we do have a national voice. It's called the National Congress. Well, I'm not convinced yet, and I'm a member of the Congress, whether or not that's going to be the vehicle to re-engage each of the states to come together and to work on solutions to address issues like have we surrendered to injustice, all social justice issues, all land rights issues. And people that have been around a lot longer than me, like this man sitting next to me and our other panel members, who I'd like to acknowledge tonight as well, know full well that there's a long road ahead, and we need that vehicle, that national vehicle, whether it's a coalition or federation of land councils, I don't know. But someone out there knows, And it's a matter of re-engaging them people to get that national voice. I don't know whether the Congress can do that. I have to wait to see whether or not they can do that. And mind you, being in a leadership position, I've got the utmost respect for our past fighters that have been out there, that put themselves up front to say, well, I'm here having a go. I'm part of the solution. I'm no longer part of the problem. And that I acknowledge and take my hat off, because it's a lonely place sometimes being in that leadership position. When I talked about my mum and my mum's situation, I went through life playing the victim. I played the victim card very well. I was a victim, and I was a victim of my own circumstances. Until I stood up and said, well, no, I'm not going to be a victim. I'm a survivor. You know, people, the non-Aboriginal people out there, not all of them, be it past governments or whatever, they paint us as victims. Well, I just want to send a clear message out that I'm a victim of nobody's circumstances. So I am a survivor, and I try to instill that into my kids. My son was going through a very bad period about 5 years ago, and he came and said, Dad, I'm going through some troubles. I said, well, son, he's a vet. Come here and stay at my place. But these are the rules. And it wasn't, I said, you meet me halfway. He was going through some stuff, and I don't want to go into it from the floor about some of the stuff that he was experiencing, but it wasn't very pleasant. That kid turned his life around because he had a positive role model and mentor. He was 2010 or 2011 National MAIDOC Apprentice of the Year. And for me, it might mean a lot to other people, but for me, that's success breeds success. Because he got out of playing the victim mentality, and he said, well, you're right, Dad, I'm a survivor. He got off his backside and had a go. And I think that brings me to my final point, where I quite clearly state that I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I live a healthy, clean life. And that is very important for me, because if I'm going to be in a leadership position, I believe that's what my constituents, that's what my members, and that's what people and my elders expect from me. If I'm going to walk it, talk it, then I must live it outside these rooms, outside of these forums. It brings me to another point in relation to intergenerational trauma and healing. I think economic development is a very important part of us moving forward and maintaining our sustainability. We've got to have that economic development, but it has to be channeled into programs that are going to address the issues and the concerns out there in our communities, like social justice, healing for our young kids. I say it with a sad heart, and it brings me emotion. My son's cousin got buried today. He was 23 years of age, and he passed away under horrific circumstances. You know, and that kid never had an opportunity to go through a healing process, to have a look at some of the situations and some of the stuff that was impacting on his life. He never had that opportunity to say, well, listen, this is what's happening at my place. This is what I'm experiencing. I don't know how to address this. These are the type of programs that I'd like to see, be it the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, be it the Healing Foundation, be it whoever, to start addressing and funneling some of our resources into programs that are going to help our kids. Because at the end of the day, that is our next generation. Whether we like it or we don't, we have to invest in succession planning, and how we do that is such a vital component of these conversations. This is a tool, this is a starting point, and I want to thank Bob Morgan and Tranby and the friends of Tranby. I wish they were friends of land councils. I think they are friends of land councils. I just want to say thank you very much to Tranby and Bob and everybody that was involved to pull this, and more importantly, to you people that have shown up tonight and support this fantastic conversation to re-engage our people. So I think that's my time. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy.